Good afternoon, and thank you for tuning in to Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your volunteer host here with you every Saturday to bring you the news and top stories from the Military Times, your independent news source about your military. Now let's begin with some top stories from the week. This one, U.S. military lifts Navy blockade in Strait of Hormuz after 2 months. The U.S. Navy on Thursday ended its blockade of vessels transiting the Strait of Hormuz to and from Iranian ports, U.S. Central Command announced. President Donald Trump issued the directive, ending an operation that began on April 12th and led to the redirection of 142 commercial vessels and disabling of 9 non-compliant vessels. Our great naval ships will remain in the general area to make sure that all aspects of the agreement are adhered to, obeyed, and in full force and effect, CENTCOM said. The United States and Iran signed a memorandum of understanding Wednesday that calls for a 60-day ceasefire and the reopening of the Strait of Hormuz. The U.S. will also lift sanctions against Iran and help carve out a $300 billion reconstruction fund to help the country rebuild its economy as part of the Memorandum of Understanding. Although Trump has been adamant about shutting down Iran's nuclear program as part of any peace deal, the MOU stated that the exact details of an agreement on the topic between both sides will be ironed out in further negotiations. Despite a formal agreement to end hostilities, the president's aggressive posture remained. Trump told reporters at the Group of Seven summit in France on Wednesday that if Iran did not comply with the agreement, the U.S. would, quote, go right back to dropping bombs right smack in the middle of their head. Two oil tankers have reportedly made their way from Iranian ports since the U.S. Navy blockade was lifted. Trump said Monday on Truth Social that the Strait of Hormuz had reopened. He clarified during the G7 summit that the U.S. military was still mine-hunting and mine-sweeping underwater explosives that Iran had laid in the sea passage. The U.S. had already found several mines, and the strait would be fully open by Friday, he said. In other news, this article reads, Senate eyes Hegseth travel cuts without probes into Iran school bombing and boat strikes. Senate lawmakers are pushing to restrict Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth travel spending until he provides lawmakers with a civilian harm investigation into the February bombing of an Iranian girls' school and unedited video footage of the Latin American boat strikes. The Senate Armed Services Committee included a provision in its version of the Fiscal Year 2027 National Defense Authorization Act that would reduce funding for Hegseth's travel to no more than 25% until the committee receives what lawmakers describe as overdue reports and supporting documents. The committee approved its version of the NDAA last week in an 18-9 vote, sending the bill to the full Senate. House lawmakers advanced their version the week prior. The provision cuts Hegseth's travel funding by 75%, until the committee receives the civilian harm investigations for 3 separate 2025 Yemen strikes and the February strike on the girls' school in Minab, Iran. On February 28th, the first day of the Iran war, a school in southern Iran was struck by a U.S. Tomahawk cruise missile, killing at least 165 people, most of them schoolgirls. President Donald Trump claimed that Iran could have obtained the missile, despite questions about how Tehran would have gained access. The strike has been under investigation by the Pentagon since March. Speaking on Wednesday in France, Trump was asked about the investigation and whether anyone in the Trump administration would be held accountable. Trump said in response, quote, it's such a strange question to be asked at this date because you're talking about a long time ago. But nobody did that on purpose. Mistakes are made, war is nasty, but I know it's under investigation, and I could have a report for you tomorrow. I would ask Pete Hegseth that question because they have it under investigation, he concluded. Another provision in the Senate NDAA moved to prohibit the use of military funds for the operations against Iran without congressional authorization and restricted travel funding for Hegseth's office until lawmakers submit a report on how the Iran war has impacted readiness. The amendment failed to pass in a 13-14 vote. Unedited video of strikes conducted by U.S. Southern Command on terrorist organizations that were allegedly smuggling drugs in Latin American waters would also need to be submitted. Since September 2025, the U.S. military has conducted strikes on vessels in the Caribbean Sea and Eastern Pacific Ocean that they alleged were carrying drugs. As of June 16th, the military has disclosed 64 strikes that have killed at least 191 people. The committee is also seeking information about the Defense Department procedures for notifying Congress about sensitive military operations. Lawmakers have previously criticized Hegseth over congressional oversight following reports that a special operations team attacked survivors of an alleged drug smuggling vessel strike off Venezuela's coast in September of 2025. Hegseth refused to publicly release footage of the attack, instead only showing members of the House and Senate Armed Services Committee. The provision would also require the unredacted investigation by U.S. Special Operations Command into Operation Absolution Resolve, the U.S. military operation executed on January 20th to capture Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. Senate lawmakers also requested a certification that shows contractor support for clandestine and intelligence activities and a report on support to Ukraine required under last year's NDAA. Now let's move to reports concerning military families. With this headline, doorstep grocery delivery expanding to all U.S. commissaries. Eligible customers will soon have access to doorstop delivery from all 178 commissaries in the United States, commissary officials announced Tuesday. The service through the commissary Click2Go program has been offered at 70 commissary locations since January. Starting June 22nd, the Defense Commissary Agency will begin rolling out the delivery service to the remaining 108 stores, reaching all stores by the end of September, officials said. That includes stores in Alaska and Hawaii. Commissary officials advise customers to check with their local store for specific dates about when the service will be available, or check their commissary store's online page for more information. The service will be available to customers living within a 20-mile radius of their commissary. Customers are charged a delivery fee that is based on the distance from the store. Customers can also include an optional tip for the driver. Currently, the delivery fee for all commissaries will be $17.75 for customers within 10 miles and $31.25 for those within 11 to 20 miles. The fee is set by the contractor. The commissary agency does not have the same flexibility in pricing delivery fees as commercial retailers because of their limitations in marking up prices. Groceries can be delivered to the customer's home or workplace. Commissary officials have hosted focus groups with customers, including new, young, enlisted service members and disabled veterans and their caregivers. They heard about concerns related to convenience and accessibility in being able to take advantage of the commissary savings benefit. "We're excited about expanding to everybody in the U.S., said Todd Waldemar, founder and CEO of On Point, the company contracted to handle the deliveries. Under the system, customers order groceries online and they are retrieved by commissary store employees who pick up the items and hand the orders over to On Point. On Point then delivers the groceries to the customer's location. The delivery can occur as soon as 3 hours after the order is submitted, depending on the location, because commissaries need the time to pack the order. Commissary officials have provided an online ordering with curbside pickup service for years and have been working to provide a delivery service. Officials have said the service can be especially helpful for families with young children, service members living in the barracks, and disabled veterans and their caregivers. Commissary officials are not currently considering doorstep delivery for overseas commissaries because of overseas regulatory constraints. And that's all for that article, but up next, the DoD should review special needs health care programs to ensure they're helping military families, Watchdog says. According to a new report from government auditors, defense officials need to review their special needs health care coverage to make sure it meets the needs of military families. The Government Accountability Office looked at the TRICARE Extended Care Health option, known as ECHO, and its ECHO Home Health Care benefit, known as EHHC. Military families may face challenges getting access to these services, which help individuals keep, learn, or improve skills and functioning for daily living, provide durable medical equipment and incontinence supplies, and offer caregiver support, such as respite care. Families with special needs may have difficulty getting access to the services they need, especially because of frequent military moves. The coverage may be outdated, with the amounts at the same level since 2009, auditors noted in a GAO report published Monday. Because of rising healthcare costs, the Defense Health Agency, quote, lacks reasonable assurances that ECHO benefits, including EHHC services, are fully meeting the program's purpose of mitigating the disabling effects of a qualifying condition, auditors stated. The coverage limit for the ECHO program has remained at $36,000 per enrollee per calendar year since 2009, when lawmakers last authorized an increase. Auditors said that with inflation, that equates to about $24,000 in 2025 dollars. About 27,000 eligible dependents were enrolled in ECHO in 2024. According to the DOD, most of these are children with intellectual, developmental, or physical disabilities or other significant health needs. Eligibility and other requirements and coverage vary between the service branches. Of the total ECHO population, about 1,000 were homebound with medically complex conditions and qualified for the ECHO home health care benefit. But out of those 27,000 enrolled, only about 4,235, or 16%, used the ECHO services, auditors stated. In their response to a draft report, the DOD disagreed with the GAO recommendation to assess whether the coverage limit of $36,000 is enough. They stated that in 2024, the 4,235 enrollees had an average total government expenditure of $6,600. That $36,000 coverage limit is set by law. Those who require the ECHO home health care services are not subject to the cap. Auditors noted that a review could provide information for any potential congressional action. Lawmakers required the GAO to conduct this review of the coverage for nursing care, habilitative programs, and respite care through TRICARE ECHO and other federal programs. ECHO respite care services must be provided by a TRICARE authorized home health agency to provide a short-term break for the usual caregiver. The ECHO program allows up to 16 hours per month. The auditors also reviewed state Medicaid, home, and community-based services, such as skilled nursing care and respite care in 7 states with high military populations. Military families may be eligible for this care, which in some cases may offer more benefits than ECHO, but access can be limited. Auditors cited a study that found in 2025, it took about 32 months to move from a waiting list to enroll in one of these state programs. Families have said that by the time they can receive the services in a state, it is time for them to move. The DOD is in the process of standardizing its eligibility requirements and the number of respite care hours offered across all the military service branches through the Exceptional Family Member Program. DOD officials told GAO auditors that they expect to fully implement standardization of the respite care services by October of 2027, and those with profound need would be eligible for up to 32 hours of respite care per month. Of all the services the GAO auditors reviewed, respite care was the most frequently requested from 2022 through 2024, according to data from one of the TRICARE managed care contractors. But about 68% of the authorizations for services were not used by the families. Defense Health Agency officials told auditors shortages of respite care providers may contribute to unused services. The shortage can also delay or limit access to nursing care services for military families. Low respite care hours and low reimbursement offered by ECHO may also contribute to challenges in getting providers, according to the Government Accountability Office report. Two Echo case managers told auditors that even if the respite hours increased to 32 hours per month, it would still be hard to find providers, since respite care providers want more hours than that. And now let's take a look at some new top stories in military history, with this headline, Hell Ship, responsible for the largest single-day loss of Allied POWs, discovered after more than 80 years. Struck by an Allied torpedo, the Japanese Hell Ship, Hofuku Maru, was split in half and went under the water in less than 3 minutes, taking more than 1,000 Allied POWs with it. Quote provided by the Hell Ship's Memorial Foundation. More than 80 years after its sinking, long-buried documents in both the American and Japanese archives held the key to locating the seemingly lost location of the Japanese Hell Ship, Hofuku Maru. Now, explorer Josh Gates, working with the Hell Ship's Memorial Foundation, is taking viewers along for that historic journey in an all-new season of Expedition Unknown. The first episode of the two-hour event premieres on Wednesday, June 24th, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, on the Discovery Channel. On September 21st, 1944, the Hofuku Maru, alongside 10 other ships forming convoy MATA-27, was transporting more than 1,000 Allied Dutch and British service members when it was sunk by American planes. Among combatants on both sides, the Japanese alone refused to guarantee the safety of POWs at sea or mark their prisoner transports. Friendly fire accounted for a staggering 93% of the POW deaths on these ships, according to Gregory Michno, author of Death on the Hell Ships. According to historian David Aquila, to add to the sheer terror of the experience, by 1944, these Hell Ships were carrying prisoners in numbers 6 times greater than what the Japanese had deemed acceptable at the beginning of the war. This practice, called komansai, or super full capacity, gave each man less than 1 square yard of space for voyages that lasted up to 70 days. The crowded, disease-ridden conditions, says historian Gavin Dawes, were comparable to those on the slave ships of the 18th century. One of the few survivors of the Hofuku Maru sinking, Captain Nigel Evans, later testified in British war crimes trials held in Singapore shortly after the war's end. Evans said, "Conditions on board became terrible. It was a common sight to see prisoners of war eating their meals within 6 feet of a corpse being prepared for burial. On the day before we sailed, over a third of officers and men were unable to walk unassisted, and there were a number of mental cases." Evans survived the sinking by boarding another Japanese ship and was taken to a POW camp in Taiwan. By the end of the war, conservative estimates suggest that 50,000 Allied POWs boarded Hell Ships, and 21,000 of those men did not survive. That tally accounts for more deaths, according to Michno, than were sustained in combat by the U.S. Marines during the entire Pacific campaign. The sinking of the Hofuku Maru that September day marks one of the largest single-day losses of Allied POW lives. Struck by an Allied torpedo, the vessel was split in half and went under the water in less than 3 minutes. More than 1,000 Allied POWs were still trapped in its hold. Due to incorrect U.S. records of the event, searchers were led too far north for decades. That is, until researcher John Dureski of the Hell Ships Memorial Foundation and historian Tim Beckinsall stumbled upon a digitized Japanese after-action report written by officers on board the convoy's lead ship. It contained a hand-drawn account detailing the location of each ship within the convoy and a note stating that the Hofuku Maru sunk at 10:35 a.m. But the revelations did not stop there. Hidden in plain sight was an aerial photograph captured by the lead American Curtis SB-2C Hell Diver just moments before the attack. Gates says, "This is what they refer to in the business, guys, as a smoking gun." Researcher Randy Anderson said, "We were absolutely stunned that Japanese sources had information on where the convoy was attacked and what ships were hit." Beckinsall shared his archival findings with the British Embassy, then the Dutch and Philippine military attachés. After the compelling evidence, the Cultural Heritage Agency of the Netherlands agreed to fund an initial sonar survey and a preliminary dive mission to the site, which took place this past December and January, CNN reports. But the dive mission initially hit a snag. Despite divers finding some kind of wreckage that pointed to the Hofuku Maru, the 1991 eruption of Mount Pinatubo, and the subsequent flood of volcanic ash threatened to engulf the wreck. With the help of Calvin Myers, a maritime archaeologist for Marine Imaging Technologies, and Evan Kovacs, an underwater imaging specialist, hundreds of images were taken of the wreck and then turned into a 3D model via a technique known as photogrammetry. Myers and Gates have dived the wreck several times, reporting that they encountered human remains on the deck. Neither went into the holds. Gates told CNN, "This ship is a grave, and now that she's been identified, the governments of the UK, the Netherlands, and the United States have been notified, and they'll determine the next course of action." Using a combination of navigation analysis and archival, cartographic, and archaeological evidence, the Cultural Heritage Agency of the Netherlands confirmed on June 8th that the vessel is most likely the Hofuku Maru. "The pieces all fit," states Beckinsall in the release. "The vessel is in the right size, the right place, and from the correct period. I am convinced this is the Hofuku Maru." And now, another top story in service history. Secret Service agent who shielded Kennedy laid to rest at Arlington in full circle moment. When the sound of a gunshot pierced the lively hum of a crowded motorcade more than 60 years ago, Clint Hill threw himself across the bodies of President John F. Kennedy and Jacqueline Kennedy. The former Secret Service agent, whose actions became a defining part of that fatal Dallas day, was laid to rest this week at Arlington National Cemetery, the same burial ground as President Kennedy, with military honors. Hill was 93 when he passed away February 21, 2025, according to the United States Secret Service Association. Hill was drafted and served 3 years in the Army Counterintelligence Corps before he was sworn in as a Secret Service agent in 1958. He went on to work as an agent under five presidents, including Presidents Dwight D. Eisenhower, Kennedy, Lyndon B. Johnson, Richard Nixon, and Gerald Ford. He was awarded the Treasury Department's highest civilian award for bravery, and Jacqueline Kennedy personally requested that Hill remain a member of her security team after the assassination, accompanying her from the fated limousine to the hospital and eventually to the president's funeral at Arlington National Cemetery. When the North Dakota native retired, Hill had climbed the ranks to become responsible for all Secret Service Protective Forces as the Assistant Director of Protective Operations. But he never forgot the moment that a second bullet barreled into President Kennedy's head, killing him. Though he progressed in his career, Hill sunk into depression and was tormented with post-traumatic stress, self-doubt, and guilt. He retired from the service in 1975 at the advice of medical professionals. Hill later said that he spent the 7 years after his retirement, which was at the age of 43, sequestered away from the world. "Nobody talked about PTSD. There was no counseling for guys like me," Hill said in a quote from the cemetery's Thursday release. "Now when I talk to groups or people struggling with trauma, I tell them to find somebody they can talk to," he said, adding, "No matter how old you are, talking about it will help." Hill worked with journalist Lisa McCubbin on four different books, and the pair eventually married in 2021. McCubbin Hill said the couple chose the National Burial Ground because it gave him a lot of peace to be laid to rest where he stood decades before at President Kennedy's funeral. Mourners placed their hands on his urn in farewell. After Hill's ceremony and service, his wife and her family visited President Kennedy's gravesite. She said, "It feels full circle." Now, lastly, in headline news, U.S. Army fugitive arrested in Spain after decades on the run. A former U.S. Army soldier convicted of rape, desertion, and indecent assault was arrested in Spain nearly 30 years after fleeing his unit in Germany, ending one of the longest-running manhunts in U.S. Marshals history, the agency announced last week. Jesse Busey, who had been on the run since 1996, was arrested November 10, 2025, in Malaga, Spain, where authorities said he was teaching English and living under an alias. He has been extradited to the U.S. disciplinary barracks at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, where he begins his 16-year military prison sentence. Busey was convicted in absentia for rape, desertion, and 2 counts of indecent assault. In addition to the imprisonment, he also received a reduction in grade to E1 and dishonorable discharge. The investigation was first reported on by Task and Purpose. The Army's Criminal Investigation Division previously posted a $25,000 reward for information leading to his capture. He was last seen fueling his vehicle at a gas station on an Army base in Schweinfurt, Germany, before disappearing. Using a different identity, the marshal said he joined the French Foreign Legion in late 1996 and served until early 2000. When he left the French Foreign Legion, Busey was homeless in France and took on the identity of a Nigerian citizen 18 years younger. Authorities believe Busey never returned to the U.S. and said they focused the investigation in Europe and Africa before receiving a tip from someone who responded to a social media request for assistance. The marshals credited Busey's apprehension and extradition to teamwork between the Army, Interpol, the Spanish National Police Force, the Dover, Delaware Police Department, the New Jersey State Police, the Justice Department's Office of International Affairs, the Ministry of Justice of Spain, and the public. And with that, we conclude this week's reading of the Military Times. Thank you once again for tuning in to Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your host, signing out.